Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so as we continue to learn Tanya, Perek Lamed Aleph, the 31st chapter of Tanya, which deals with some very real issues, including the concept of sadness / depression, and the notion of, just turn it like this a little, now we're straight, and the notion of turning that into something positive. So we learned about two things. Number one, sadness comes from klipa. Klipa is the husk. It's the extraneous part of existence. It was made to be discarded. Don't buy bananas without peels. Don't eat the banana with the peel. Understand that the peel is supposed to be discarded. So it serves a purpose, but it is in and of itself not supposed to be ingested, not supposed to become part of our everyday existence. So sadness is sometimes necessary. It means it could serve a purpose, but remember, it's just a means to an end. It's not the state of being that any one of us are looking for or want to remain in. So the first thing we said is it's klipas nega. And the second thing that we said is it's important for us to make a distinction between atzvus and merirus, which literally translates as depression / sadness, and merirus, which literally translates as bitterness, but perhaps could better be translated as frustration. For out of bitterness or frustration, one gets up and does something about it. Whereas out of sadness and depression, you simply stay in bed. So looking ultimately for motivating factors, for people to live lives that are wholesome and meaningful and effective. So we should get frustrated about things and do something about it. This is kind of what we talked about up until this point. The Alter Rebbe now maintains that real joy can come to a person after having experienced this kind of negative feeling, which means after realizing that it's klipas nega, that it's only a shell or a husk with positive purpose, but ultimately a shell or a husk, not redeeming in and of itself. And after making sure that you distill it into frustration and bitterness, so you're doing something about it, after this you can come, acharkach yovel lidei simcha amitis, then a person can come to true joy. Dahaina. How so? How does that bring you to joy? I'm sort of saying, I'm glad not to be depressed anymore, I'm glad not to be sad, but why should I be joyous? Now let me remind you that the sadness and depression we're talking about here is not because of reasons of external causes. We already dealt with that in chapter 26 and 27. We're not talking about the causes of material suffering. We're not talking about things going wrong in life. That's already been dealt with, and if that's what you want, you got to go back to those chapters. We're talking here specifically about the fact that people might have, and Alter Rebbe saw this from his spiritual counseling, they would fall into a state of unresponsiveness. But their emotions simply wouldn't be stimulated. They would be thinking all the right thoughts and doing all the right things, singing the right songs, eating the right kugel. It's not working. It's not working. They're not picking themselves up. They don't get excited about it. So why is normal stimulation not working here? So what happened? What went wrong? And the Alter Rebbe identified this as something called Timtum HaLev, that the heart is sealed off. And in order to get around Timtum HaLev, or to break the cycle of Timtum HaLev, which means that one's heart is stuffed, or one's sensories are now kind of sealed off, in order to be able to get past that, the Alter Rebbe suggested that a person has to use some very, very harsh mechanism in taking a serious stock-taking of himself and of his life and where he's up to and so on and so forth. And having done all that, then a person can shatter that enamel and the good old neshama can shine again. The problem, of course, with this was that once you think about all these things, it's going to bring you down. Alter Rebbe said, well, it's going to bring you down, but it's not entirely negative. Because number one, the only way to fight negativity is with negativity. So you fight fire with fire, as we discussed at length in the previous two classes. And ultimately, this will bring you or motivate you to start to serve Hashem with greater fervor. And then you'll get really happy. Why? Dahainu. Alter Rebbe says, Shezeis yoshev alibi l'nachme b'kiflayim. After all, the person's got to now mollify and comfort himself. He says, I have all these thoughts about how inappropriate I am, how far I am from the way I should be, how distant my destination is. So how do I deal with this? And some people's answer is, well, I'm not really so bad. I mean, I'm kind of bad, but look at my neighbors. They're doing much worse than me. And if you really want to look at it, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, I know I said all these things to myself. I said I'm really bad and I really fell short, but I don't really believe it. I'm really pretty good. In fact, I'm really fantastic. And then it presents, now I feel better, now I'm fantastic. But the problem is you just undid, first of all, it's not true. We're not so fantastic. Second of all, we just undid everything we accomplished in breaking that enamel and allowing the neshama to shine forth. Okay, we have a problem. So the Alter Rebbe's suggestion is to stick with the truth. However, leimer lelibay, to tell his heart, means don't physically talk to yourself, but means to kind of like think about this. Emes who came believe suffik. Indeed, it is true without any shadow of doubt. Rochek, shani rochek me'oid me'Hashem betachlus u'meshukutz u'mesuv. That I am very, very far from the godly reality. That I'm an abominable, self-centered, selfish creature. Thinks always about themselves and never about others. Forgets about God and the Creator and the purpose of life. Yeah, I get that all. Okay, but the Alter Rebbe says, you know, ach kol zehu ani levadi. That's just the me. That's just the I who owns an iPhone. That's not really what's inside me. That's my guf in my nefesh achayunis. That's my body with the natural soul, which the vital soul which enables me to live physically. However, but inside me there is literally a nuclear essence, a piece of God, which this nuclear essence or piece of God, even in somebody who is an absolute spiritual lightweight, even if somebody who has absolutely no sophistication in his or her spiritual growth, nonetheless, underneath all of that surface, there is a vibrant piece of divinity, a piece of God. And in Nitzot Zelukus, with a spark of godliness, mamash, literally, hamalubish b'olahachyesa. And now, the Alter Rebbe is going to say, okay, that's great. So what does that help me? How does it make me happy? Even though I'm dirty and filthy, even though I'm an abominable and actually quite reprehensible on the surface, deep down, inside, I'm really nice. I'm really good. Meaning, I have nice potential. In theory, I'd be really good. Of course, I'm not. But that doesn't matter. In theory, I won the gold medal. And in theory, I'm so happy. And in theory, I'm so successful. Mind you, I'm not. But don't worry. In theory, I really am. How does that help anybody? So the Alter Rebbe will now explain this in three stages. He's going to tell us, number one, you have to realize that the fact that your neshama is not able to function right is because you are in a state of exile. You're in a state of galut. Okay, what does that do for me? Well, if I'm in a state of galut, then I should awaken a sense of compassion and mercy for this poor little neshama that's stuck inside. And then Alter Rebbe says, I'm going to give you the keys to unlocking the door. And when I give you the keys to unlocking the door so that the neshama can be released from its shackles, you will be able to experience real and true spiritual weightlessness. And truth be told, when we come out of a lousy situation and we're redeemed from it and we're able to get past it, it's always exhilarating. That's like an amazing feeling. People don't appreciate whatever it is they may have until they don't have it. When somebody spends time in the dark for a long time, they appreciate the light much more. I once spoke to a woman who lost her eyesight for a few years, and then her eyesight came back. And she says, you have no idea the gift of sight, what it means to me. And nobody appreciates the gift of sight the way she does, because she didn't have her sight. Or a person, Rahman al-Tzan, who was a death's doorstep and came back to life. Speak to somebody who was very ill and got a blood transfusion and was feeling barely almost comatose, and then life comes back to them. And all of a sudden, the world is not black and white, it's full of color again. And all of a sudden, you feel a sense of energy. There's an amazing sense of elation. It's like the cords have been cut free, and that's real joy. And the Alter Rebbe says, you don't have to be bludgeoned or beaten. You don't have to be physically compromised in order to experience this. You just have to take some time to contemplate. To contemplate the emes. What's the emes? The emes is that we all have beautiful, magnificent souls. Beautiful neshamas. Really beautiful neshamas. Amazing neshamas. Neshamas which are a piece of God. Well, if I have a neshama that's a piece of God, how come I don't feel like a piece of God? How come I feel like a piece of garbage? How come I don't feel free? How come I feel so shackled? How come I don't feel sensitive? Instead I feel selfish. How come I don't feel compassionate? Instead I feel angry and frustrated. How come? So the answer is because my neshama is in galus. So what does galus mean? Most people think that galus has something to do with beating and deprivation. But it really doesn't. It really doesn't. We're in galus now also. Galut simply means where a person or a situation is displaced. And displacement means that you're not able to function freely. So if you took a plant and you locked it in a room like this, lock all the doors, is the plant in galut? Not unless it gets water every day. It gets water every day, gets sunshine every day. This tree would be just as happy as the tree outdoors. The fact that it's stuck in these four walls in no way limit or inhibit the plant. Why? Because what does the plant need? The plant just needs to spread its branches. As long as it spreads its branches, it's happy. If you took the plant and you put it in an iron box where it couldn't move, then the plant would feel stifled. If you took water away from the plant, or you took soil away from the plant, it didn't have nutrients and it couldn't grow, then the plant would feel stifled, whatever plants feel. There actually is proof that plants have feelings on some plant level. If you took an animal and you put this animal in a situation where you allowed him no freedom of speech, can't speak. He cannot read what books he wants. He can't even go on Facebook. Took all these privileges away from this dog. All you gave him was an endless supply of food and water and a large, beautiful, natural habitat to run around in. Is the animal in galut? Of course not. The animal's perfectly happy. The animal's able to live his animal life freely. How about if you take a person and lock him into a natural habitat and give him piles of dog food and as much water as he wants? And by the way, take away his clothes just for good measure. And you put a little dog collar around him and you say, enjoy your life. You'll be here for the next 20 years. Person would go insane. It's the greatest galut. Why? There's nobody to talk to. There's nobody to socialize with. He doesn't have any dignity. He's being treated like an animal. I could go on. The point is that galut is all relative. It's relative. It's a relative term. It depends to what your expectations are. It depends what your potential is. It depends on the situation you're in. The neshama is in galut. Understand that. The neshama is severely compromised in its ability to function and feel as close as to God. It's not able. Why? Because it's stuck in the body. A body that continuously demands attention, that wants food and wants drink and wants respect and wants honor and wants glory and wants to be his ego to be petted. It's all the body wants. And it endlessly makes these demands. And the neshama has no interest in any of those things. The neshama wants another mitzvah, more closeness to God, weightlessness, to forget about all this narishkeit that gets in the way of the neshama. And so the neshama is in galut. And because the neshama is in this big galut, the imkain, we say, adarabah, on the contrary. Kol mashani, a person could say to himself, mashani betachla sadichuk mashem, the further I am from God, the more selfish, the more inappropriate, the more slothful, the more arrogant, whatever it is that the body is really good at. All these things, hadei ha-nefesh olikistra bi-begolos yeser. So my godly soul is in a bigger golos. V'harachmanos olea gadei l'maid. So then the rachmanos is very, very great. Now, if you saw somebody who was in a terrible situation and you had rachmanos, which is a normal human feeling, and we Jewish people are just like everybody else, only a little more so. So you see somebody in a great rachmanos. You see it's just a terrible pity on them. And you see this person and you could actually help them. What would you do? If you're a normal person, you help them. And the worse situation they're in, the more rachmanos you have. You know, these organizations that raise money for people who are homeless or people who are starving. They'll show you horrible pictures. Show you pictures of people who are emaciated, people who are living in the garbage. And what's those pictures designed to do? It's designed to evoke mercy. And if you have rachmanis, what are you going to do? What do they want you to do? They want you to give. Want you to write a check. Unfortunately, it happens to be half of those pictures are not real pictures. And the organizations oftentimes are not real organizations. That's another problem. But the point is that they would seek to get through to the human side, which is the Rachmanis side. And once our Rachmanis gets peaked, once our Rachmanis gets, so to speak, engaged, automatically we follow, we say, this cannot stand. This cannot continue. This must change. But if you don't feel it's Rachmanis, if you don't understand that things are unfortunate, well, whatever. It's not important. And the way, incidentally, we feel the Rachmanis is when it's something that's important to us, something that's meaningful to us. But if it's not something we relate to or understand or appreciate, we may not feel rachmanis. So if somebody was doing fantastic in ballet school, and then the funds dried up and they can't go to ballet, say, could you have rachmanis on me? I'm a ballerina in the making. I could be this amazing ballet performer, but I don't have any money to go to ballet school. I don't know. Ballet doesn't mean anything to me. I say, I'm really sorry to hear that. Don't you have rachmanis on me? Don't you realize my glorious ballet campaign future and potential is being wasted? No, actually, it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't. But if I would see a Yiddish kind who is losing the opportunity for Yiddishkeit and is falling away from Yiddishkeit, why? Because of funding or because there's something they can't go, I would mean something to me. Now, for a ballet aficionado, he would be very offended what I said. How could you? Who cares about Yiddishkeit? Who cares if he knows Chumash or not? Ballet, this is okay, understand? So we just see things differently. But the point is, when something that you feel for, then you have Rachmanis for it. So the Alter Rebbe says, so get your mind in the right place. Understand who you are, where your neshama is, and understand where your neshama comes from, what its potential is, and if you spend enough time thinking about this, and yes, a big part of Chabad is thinking, not necessarily brilliance, or not necessarily profundity, but thinking, contemplation. It's a big part of Chabad, Chacham Bina Das. It's not for geniuses, Chabad, but it is for thoughtful people, which every one of us is capable of being thoughtful. Spend the time thinking, contemplate. If you think about this, so the more we think about it, the more we relate to it, we understand it, we appreciate it. And then a person says, "Hanefesh alikis should be begolos godlu yeser." My nefesh alikis is terrible golos, and therefore rachmanus alagadela. So, if a person is only normal, if they have rachmanus, v'lazeh osim kol magmosi v'cheftzi, and this I'll put all my attention to lahaitzi or lahalaisa migolos. I gotta get this neshama free. It's rachmanus. It's such a pity. I have to free her. La Shiva Abesavia, to bring her home to her father's house, Kinurel, like she was in a young princess, Kedim Shinislab Shabagufi, before she got stuck in this body of mine. Shahoisa Nichlelas Ba'idi is Barach, that she was absorbed into the infinite light of God. Yuchedas Ime Betachlas, she was at one with God. Vagamato came to, hey, Klulum Yuchedas Be'iz Barach, now so she deserves the same treatment. She should be a princess now too. I feel bad about this. So I'm going to do something about it. And now the Alter Rebbe says, because that's the case, because I understand that the bodily reality, that the material reality is so shackling and so limiting and so exilic for the neshama, and I feel bad for the neshama, so now I want to free the neshama. So that comes the question, one second. This whole business of the neshama being freed is not even possible, unless you were suggesting suicide. It's a never-ending story. Like, how are you getting out of the body? The body's the body. You feed it today, it's okay. He leaves you alone for 20 minutes, and then we're back at it again. So, like, what is the point of this? The Alter Rebbe just gives us this beautiful picture of a big rachmanus on the neshama. Okay, I feel bad, so what should I do? How do you want me to escape? The Alter Rebbe says there is one way in which we can break cracks in that great big wall that divides us and God. There is a way to allow light into our life. How's that? How can the neshama be perfectly happy? How could the neshama experience the weightlessness of days by gone? And the answer is kisha osim kol magmasi b'teiru mitzvahs. When a person throws themselves into the performance of Torah study and mitzvah observance. When you do this, lahalbish behem kol eser b'china se'achinah. By the way, this doesn't just mean to do mitzvahs on some level, because then the neshama, half the neshama is still imprisoned. So if a person is doing mitzvahs physically, but their mind and heart are elsewhere, so then which part of the neshama is freed? Only the lowest faculty of neshama. But if a person is meditating and thinking about Torah ideas, doesn't do any mitzvahs, and doesn't have any fervor for it, but just enjoys the intellectual gymnastics of it, so then he's freed his mind, but his heart is still shackled. And his functional capabilities are shackled. So therefore, how much of me needs to be involved in my Yiddishkeit? How much of me? All of me. All of me. Which means from my mind, through my heart, and my functions. Everything. And that means that a Yid understands the Torah that he's learning according to his or her level. It means that it's invested with a sense of fervor and passion and discipline and focus and commitment. It means that we follow this through with action, taking action, dealing with the situation until the mitzvahs are performed. And for example, the Alter Rebbe says this is especially true with regard to the mitzvah of tefillah, the most unpopular mitzvah in the whole Torah, especially these days. Prayer? Who wants to pray? Go talk to the walls. What is it? Pray? And it's the strangest thing. The more observant people are, the more they talk in shul. And the less respectful they are in shul. And you ask a simple question. How come? And the answer is because they don't want to be in shul. Nobody wants to sit and pray. Oh God, I'm nothing. You're everything. I need you. Nobody wants to say that. So in a shul where people aren't coming on a regular basis, they only come because they have to on occasion. They're terrified out of their wits. They're uncomfortable. So they're quiet. Anyway, they're sitting next to their spouse. They hold each other's hands for dear life to get through it. So, is it over yet? Is it over yet? It's over now. Okay, it's over. Now we can leave. So, of course, they don't talk. They don't talk. The first time you visit something which is big and frightening and overwhelming, you don't talk either if you go once a year. But people go all the time and they feel it's their home. So now they're comfortable. So why shouldn't they talk? It's a great distraction. It takes it away. I'm sitting next to people. Why shouldn't I talk? That doesn't mean it's okay. It just means it's naturally going to be a bigger problem. So what should we do about it? The answer is we should work at it. And guess what? Prayer is called avoda. You know what avoda means? Hard work. It comes from the word eved, which means to slave away at something. And it is really hard to pray well. But the Alter Rebbe says it's also really important. Litzik al Hashem b'tzarla, to cry out to Hashem in pain, megalusa from the galus, begufi ha-meshukas, that a person should actually feel the sense of loss, the aching sense of loneliness and emptiness, and he should cry out to Hashem, lo yitzia mimazgo l'davka b'yiz baruch. I once met a man who suffered a terrible tragedy in his life. Terrible tragedy. And he told me that the only comfort he ever had was during prayer. And he said, I cannot tell you how during those months after the tragedy that occurred, I couldn't, the thought of prayer ending was terrifying for me. He said, it was my only comfort zone. I would hold on, I would savor every word. It was the only time I felt close to God. It was the only time I felt I could escape my reality. And I would pray, he said, and then as I started to get better, I started to recover, so then my prayer kind of tapered off, which is unfortunate, right? But this is what the Alter Rebbe is talking about. When the person feels that they're in this terrible place, and the only way to get out of this place is when they're able to function in a different headspace, a different heart space, and that's what prayer is. And this, my friends, is the meaning of tshuva ma'isim tovim. This is a very, very familiar expression which is found all across the writings of our sages in the Talmud and the Medrash. Tshuva ma'isim tovim. Good deeds, good deeds, good deeds and tshuva. What do you mean, tshuva ma'isim tovim? It's not the same thing. Ma'isim tovim is good deeds, good actions. Why tshuva? Tshuva, it ostensibly, is for an aveda. But Chassidus says, no, that's not what Chazal meant to tell you. Tshuva actually is not only for sins. Tshuva means to return, and to return means when you've been away from somewhere. So when the neshama senses how distant it is, even for a tzaddik, even for a person who's very selfless, even a person who's very compassionate, even a person who's very passionate and filled with fervor for Yiddishkeit, the neshama is very far from where it once was. And because it's far from where it once was, it yearns to be able to regain that majesty, that beauty. And because the neshama yearns so much, that is an act of tshuva. Sheheim ma'isim tovim sha'isa kedei lahoshav chelek Hashem l'mkeira. What is the connection of tshuva and ma'isim tovim? These are the good deeds that a person is doing in order to release the neshama, in order to return. The person realizes and senses that when I do a mitzvah, when I invest myself in prayer, I am actually free of all these things that bring me down. This the Alter Rebbe says should give you joy. This a person should find joy in all the time. He should find joy. He's simchas hanefesh b'tzeis mehaguf hametuav. Imagine a person can write the script of their life. You can free yourself. How can I free myself? I can free myself by living with the knowledge that the King of all kings, the Master of the universe, loves me and cares about me. And when I fulfill His will, then I am at one with Him. And I can actually live with that. And a person contemplates that. And that's where he finds joy. In the moments that he or she prays, in the moments that he or she is studying Torah, in the moments that he or she is fulfilling a mitzvah, that I know I'm doing this, and this is an amazing sense of freedom. And a sense of freedom that brings with it a sense of joy. Veshava el beis aviyah kenoreha, the princess is able to return, so to speak, to the home of her youth, to her childhood home. And when is that? That's b'shas ha-teira v'ha-aveda. That's at the time of studying Torah and serving Hashem through prayer. There's no greater joy than liberation. No greater joy than freedom. When your freedom is taken away, when you're exiled and displaced, when your functionality is disabled, and then you're granted freedom. No greater joy. It's the most amazing elation. Kemashal, like the famous mashal which is brought, a prince who was in prison, they had him hitched to a mill. He was busy milling like an animal. So he's sitting in prison, his freedom is inhibited, and he's treated like an animal. He's busy, instead of a donkey, instead of an ox, he was pulling the mill. And he's manuvel, he's filthy, and he's ba'ashpa, he's in the dung heap. The yatzel chavshel besamelech, and then one day the doors open and he's free and he goes back to the palace. Imagine, if you will, the joy that he would feel. It would be unlimited. You wouldn't be able to stop singing and dancing. Alter Rebbe says, this is the case every time you sit down to daven. Every time you do a mitzvah, you have experienced weightlessness and freedom.
Assuming you were there.
That's why we have to contemplate. That's why we have to realize. And therefore, it turns out that all those sobering thoughts of how far we are from God, how inappropriate we are, all those sobering thoughts, instead of bringing us down, it actually is the catalyst for the greatest joy and the greatest happiness. And that is the joy that can only come from the Oy. To be continued.
Thank you.